This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is looking into recent action from President Donald Trump to cut the United States Agency for International Development, also known as USAID, and we're asking a question that's on a lot of people's minds. Can he do that? The drama all started earlier this month when workers from Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, decided to visit the agency in person. However, at the door, the workers were denied entry, resulting in a standoff. According to NBC News, employees from Musk's department threatened to call the U.S. Marshals when USAID Director of Security John Voorhees and his deputy, Brian McGill, refused them access. The standoff was seen as the first real test of DOGE's authority in the federal government. And in the days since, Trump has sided with his oversight appointee, moving to shut down USAID and have it absorbed into the State Department. However, outside of the White House, the move from Trump has sparked legal challenges. One lawsuit in the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia resulted in a temporary restraining order regarding various aspects of the Trump administration's attempt to shutter operations at USAID. Former President John F. Kennedy founded USAID in 1961, and it was later officially established by Congress. In its decades of existence, it's made strides in providing humanitarian assistance to countries impacted by major global conflicts. The agency has a budget of more than $50 billion, and it is funded through Congress, which raises even more questions regarding Trump's authority over it. Last week, we got an update on all of this from Margaret Brennan, moderator of Face the Nation, when she joined Odyssey.
Well, we know that tens of thousands of USAID staff around the world will go on administrative leave. And overnight, we learned that only about 300 of the staff have been deemed essential. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says he's going to continue foreign aid, but restructure it. Here's the thing. He continues to issue waivers saying, go ahead with essential and emergency services that save lives. Example, he gave AIDS relief in Africa, PEPFAR, a bipartisan program that has been helping HIV-positive people in Africa now for decades. He's issuing pieces of paper that there is no one around to execute. Because when you have put all the USAID staffers on leave, locked them out of their computers since Monday, frozen their ability to obtain funding and distribute things, those orders aren't worth the paper they're written on. It has left the system crippled. The staffers that I have spoken to, some of whom are fear for their own safety because they fear that speaking out will bring attacks on them. They fear that their pensions and their protections and their union representation is powerless at this point. They say there is real expertise that is being hacked away at here in a way that will, in the long term, hurt America's national security interests. This is just one example of one particular, very small agency, by the way, you know, foreign aid is less than 1% of federal spending in a year. It's interesting that this was the first place that the DOGE entity, the thing focused on efficiency, went, not to the big agencies where all the money is spent, like the Pentagon, but rather this group of individuals who work on combating disease abroad and other goodwill efforts. So it's an interesting place to pick apart first, and it's one that has dire consequences in many ways for the folks that they were helping.
Okay. It's just it. But I got to ask you, to the core of it, President Trump is saying he is cutting the fraud that's
right.
happening. Mm-hmm. Is that happening by cutting this off at the USAID office? Is the fraud being addressed?
In terms of substantiating the fraud, it's hard to say. I mean, both Democrats and Republicans who've led the agencies have said they'd like to increase efficiency. I think the question is how you do it. Now, in terms of the fraud, all these projects are listed on the USAID website. They are earmarked and authorized by Congress. So this isn't like shadowy money, throw it in an agency that's just going willy-nilly through it and spending. It's all approved by Congress. So these lawmakers have seen it, and it was in the public record. You can't see it today because the website was taken down by the Trump administration. But before that, it was up there. In terms of the efficiency part of it, that's what we're also hearing back from some of these career officials who said, yeah, let's talk about doing things better. But in the meantime, can you do the review before you cut everything off? Figure out what you want to cut instead of cutting it all off. And that's it's the how you do it part. Because there was a stop order and emergency freeze for 90 days, that has left food rotting on ships. You had Republican senators out there saying, what are you doing? You had Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, a Republican, saying, deliver the AIDS medicine, please. I hear there's a waiver, Secretary Rubio, but then I also hear from the people in the field the drugs aren't delivered. That's the part where you're saying, is that really efficient when you're letting things that America already spent money on go to waste, like drugs, like food?
The Trump administration has been pushing to cut USAID over claims that it was misusing taxpayer funding. However, many of the allegations being used to justify the cut have now come into question. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said last week that the agency was spending, quote, $6 million to fund tourism in Egypt, $20 million on a new Sesame Street show in Iraq, and $4.5 million to combat disinformation in Kazakhstan. A New York Times fact-checking report found that the remarks from Leavitt had some truth and omitted some information. For example, the funding she mentioned for Iraq, Kazakhstan, and another $1.5 million for diversity, equity, inclusion efforts in Serbia were all true. But when it comes to the $6 million she claimed was for Egyptian tourism, the Times pointed out that the money was actually part of a bilateral assistance agreement that was signed in 2019, that's during Trump's first term in office, and that it made no mention of tourism. Whether you think the U.S. should be funding these projects or not, the question is really if Trump has the authority to shut down an agency that's funded by Congress all on his own. KCBS political analyst Mark Sandilow recently shared his thoughts on the topic.
They have, what, 10,000 workers, and they want 300 to stay?
Right. And this is a complete gutting of the agency. And, you know, people don't understand the reach that USAID has. It is the world's largest aid organization, if you want to think of it that way. No one gives that kind of money away. It's close to 50 or it's over $50 billion a year. You know, I don't know a soul who actually works at USAID, but I know at least a half a dozen people in town who have either been laid off, furloughed, or afraid they're going to be because they work for organizations, whether they're, you know, think tanks or democracy building organizations or people who give out educational grants who depend on USAID money. And now they have no idea if it's coming. I mean, USAID does everything from, you know, fund family planning clinics in Mozambique to, to providing food in Sudan. And I mean, here's the key is that you could certainly make the argument that as the richest country, arguably in the history of the world, the United States has a moral obligation to spread and share its wealth. And that's part of the literature with USAID. But that's not what most people think of it. I mean, listen to this. This is Marco Rubio, who's now the Secretary of State, who's now running USAID. He said before Trump was in office, foreign aid is not charity. We must make sure it's well spent, but it's less than 1% of our budget, and it's critical to our national security. It's soft power. The idea is you build democracies and health in other parts of the world, and they're less likely to emigrate to the United States or to create trouble. That's always been the philosophy, and now that's up in the air.
How are the lawsuits to slow down some of this activity? How are they going?
So this is going to be interesting. Congress is controlled by Republicans, and they are with Trump. That said, USAID was created with an act of Congress and an executive order. But what that means is he cannot just kill the agency. Now, what he's done is he's subsumed it into the State Department. So if Congress were against this and if Republicans stood up, they'd have a valid claim in court. The question is, will other people have standing? So we will see. It's going to be a long ways until that's resolved. But for now, all sorts of aid has been disrupted. And like I say, there are people here in Washington, as well as in the Bay Area, as a result of this, who are now going to be looking for work.
Not everyone agrees with Trump and Musk's recent actions. Still, the decision to cut USAID most likely won't be the last controversial one from the new administration. In fact, Musk has said that he wants to cut $1 trillion in government waste. But there are still questions up in the air, including what authority does the tech billionaire have to achieve his lofty goals? Also, who determines what's considered waste and what's not? Linda Bilmes, a public policy professor at Harvard, joined Odyssey to give us some insight.
At the baseline of this, I've been wondering, is DOGE itself a legal entity? Can a president just appoint people to go into various agencies this way and change things?
Well, I think that DOGE is far from the first attempt to reduce wasteful government spending. Many, many presidents have launched these kind of initiatives. Under Harry Truman, there was the Hoover Commission, and under Ronald Reagan, there was the Grace Commission. And during the Clinton administration, there was the Reinventing Government effort led by Vice President Gore. And all of them have had a lot of hoopla at the beginning and have had some successes. There are differences in that, of course, none of the folks who were involved in these previous efforts also owned something like Twitter and could instantly communicate information to 250 million people around the world. So, I mean, there are issues around Elon Musk himself as the head of this effort. But the effort itself is not a new strategy for an incoming president.
What about the strategy that it just seems so big, like the quantity game, the number of agencies that appear to be going after?
Well, I've worked in senior positions in the private sector, and I also served as assistant secretary for management and budget and CFO at the Department of Commerce during the Clinton administration. So I understand the different approaches in the public and private sector to reducing cost. But Elon Musk seems to be bringing some of the very worst aspects of the private sector into this effort. He's in theory, he could have helped introduce a more risk-taking, innovative philosophy, but he's not urging departments to innovate or to find better ways to do things that have not been working out. He's not trying to get agencies to think more strategically about what skills they want in their workforce. Instead, he's applying a kind of blunt instrument, what I call the cutting off your arm to lose weight method, which is is causing a lot more problems than it might solve. I mean, for example, these buyouts that are being provided to government employees are incentivizing the most talented, most marketable young people, exactly the ones who have some of the best skills, to leave the government.
Well, isn't it seems to be implicit in that part of the goal is to get them into the private sector.
Well, I mean, there is certainly I think in general in the government, there's very often a sort of suspicion of the private sector. And in the private sector, there is a kind of idea that a number of government workers might be lazy. But Elon Musk is coming in and almost directly accusing government workers of being lazy. And I mean, there's no way to rub people's noses the wrong way faster than that kind of approach in any organization. And I know when I first went into the government and I came from the private sector, it took me a long time to realize that the way you get things done effectively in government is by working very closely and collaboratively with the senior folks in government agencies. They are very mission-driven. They are accustomed to doing things differently under different administrations. But once they see that you are devoted to the mission and helping them do their mission more effectively, they are the ones who can affect change. And this kind of attitude that he has been bringing in with his folks around discrediting the work of government sector employees, many of whom are extraordinarily talented, it is really, you know, very, very harmful to morale and so forth.
USAID is most likely the first domino to fall in what could be a long 4 years of Trump testing his power and authority as president. However, he not only has to keep the checks and balances of the federal government in mind while he's making policy decisions, but also the court of public opinion. Despite all of the recent controversies that have come up, he seems to be doing okay in that arena. According to a recent poll from CBS YouGov, Trump has received one of the highest approval ratings ever while in office. 53% of Americans approve of the job Trump has done in his first few weeks in office. The poll highlighted the stark difference in how Americans view Trump now compared to when he left office in early 2021. Back then, just 33% approved of Trump overall, according to a Gallup poll from the time. It remains to be seen what Americans will think of Trump as time goes on. We've all seen how presidential approval ratings can be a bit fickle. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline. Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.